Well, good evening. The first thing I want to do tonight is I want my wife to stand. She doesn't know I'm going to do this. Mary, would you stand? So let's give her a hand. We've known each other since I was 12 and she was 11. And, oh, I know. But it wasn't, well, anyway. I don't want to do this. But she's my life partner. I love her dearly and owe her a lot. She's the introvert and the artist of the two. So if you really want to torture her, just line up in a bunch of, you know, have half an hour conversations with her, which are real deep right in a row. So all the good that I did with my first comic has now been undone by that. Anyway, it is good to be with you. And this evening, I want to look at three verses from Romans 1. No, I'm not going to re-exposit the text, but I think there are applications out of three verses that I want us to look at together. And they should be familiar by now. I thank my God through Jesus Christ for all of you, because your faith is being reported all over the world. And like Paul, I get reports. Of course, I get them via email and other modes. But I get them of things that God is doing in your lives and campus and through students. It's fabulous. The second verse, which Don Everts hit on last night, is I am obligated both to Greeks and non-Greeks. And I know there are fraternity and sorority staff out there who love this verse. But I hate to tell you, Paul didn't have you in mind when he wrote it. The key word here is obligated, and it is something of compulsion. Paul says he's a slave of Jesus Christ. He's a debtor. He has no choice in the matter. And we're going to come back to that verb. And then thirdly, verse 8:16, which is our theme verse for the week, and you're going to hear a lot of this. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. And like Paul, whose call was to see transformed lives, we want to see students and faculty transformed by the gospel. So, to keep this in very simple form, this is the outline for the evening. I am thankful, I am obligated, and I am not ashamed. All right, so let's start, and I want to say some areas where I'm thankful, as just as Paul is thankful in his day. And I am thankful for the gospel being shared on campus. The testimonies have just been fabulous. Now, I'm an alumnus of the University of Washington Law School. And go Dogs. It's not a good football team anymore, but boy, it's a great university. And I think the award for the best title for an outreach event has to go to the University of Washington undergraduate chapter. It's called Sex and Pizza. And when I thought of Sex and Pizza, I thought that just kind of summarizes the undergraduate experience. But it's a wonderful draw. But the thing what they did was they had three short dramas about relationships. And they invited about 120 people came, two-thirds of whom were not Christians. And then they divided into small groups. And those small groups then talked about their own experiences. And one woman was heard to say, you know, I never thought that I could be with a bunch of Christians and talk about my half mistakes and not be condemned. And so the gospel is going forward in a very good way there. I think of it, the University of Kentucky, where in about a two-week period of time, seven international students from China and Japan and India came to the Lord. Or at University of San Diego, you see San Diego, and this is a remarkable story. In one chapter, they had over 80 decisions this fall. And it's stunning. And Chris Nichols on Saturday night is going to unpack that a bit more and tell the story. But it's just, when I get reports, like Paul would get reports about what's happening with the Roman church, I get reports, I get jazzed. I get jazzed and I'm thankful for chapter planters. This is a photo that I have in my office. It's the 2006 cohort. It's the planters and the coaches and the teaching team. And I see this photo probably a dozen times a day. I want you to know you're deeply in my thoughts and prayers. What's really cool is some of the chapter plants that are occurring. At University of California, Merced, this is just, all right. I knew it was dangerous to put the logos up there like this. But what's really cool, this is an entirely new university out in the valley from scratch. We were one of the first student clubs. And this chapter has been textbook in the sense of going to small group and not going large group too soon. And this fall, half of the 60 students are freshmen. Isn't that cool? It's 30 freshmen to build on, and God is doing good things there. At Wake Forest, it's a very different because we're working with grad students there. But this was just wonderfully ripe territory to go into. There are three graduate student chapters with over 120 students in. And God is doing great things through these plants. I'm also thankful for chapter builders. And this is a photo of, again, the 2006. Those of you who are in the 2007 chapters, I love you too. I'll get to you probably next time I talk. But the 2006, this is their photo in the cohort from that year. And I just want to tell one story here, and that's Montana State. This was a chapter that had gone from 75 students down to 7. And a chapter builder came, and he talked to the 7 students and said, you know, what are we going to do here? And what I want is not a holy huddle. I want people who are missional, who will reach out on campus. And 2 of them said no thanks. So kind of a Gideon revival, this thing went down to 5 people, right? And but what happened with those 5 students is they bonded, they prayed and they prayed, they did great NSOs, and now that chapter is back over 40. And God is doing wonderful things there. You know, I spoke at the University of Wisconsin Madison chapter. You saw a video of it earlier. And 2 years ago when I was there were 4 students. We had dinner. And this year when I spoke there were 70. So God is doing this good stuff all over the place, all over the country. And I'm thankful for reports of this. I'm thankful for student conferences. And we do great conferences. The latest and the greatest was the LaFay conference out in L.A. You know, the first national conference was in 2004, and there were more than double the number of students who attended this year. And if we have half the harvest in terms of student leaders and prospective staff, it's absolutely great. So I know you folks are tired from the conference, but we're really thrilled that this happened. I'm thankful for our faculty ministry. Did you know at the University of Michigan that over 60 faculty meet every week in small cell groups to pray for each other in the campus? Do you know that there are gigs going on with faculty there? Did you know in the last 2 years that 3 faculty have come to the Lord? This is a great thing. And if we're going to renew the campus, yeah. If we're going to see the campus renewed, faculty have to play a very key role in that. I'm also thankful for our relationships with college administrators. And this is a photo of Dr. Philip Burrows at Georgetown University. And probably as most of you are aware, we had a little bump about 18 months ago at Georgetown. 5 Protestant ministries were kicked off, were de-recognized, and our student leaders and our staff were absolutely fantastic. But I remember flying and meeting with Phil in his office, and I found out we're both from Seattle. We went to competing high schools. We knew similar people. It was unbelievable, the providence of God in opening the doors. And over the last year and a half, he and I have developed a friendship. And, you know, I would have never foreseen this in light of what had happened. My daughter goes to Georgetown, so the opportunity to drop by and see him. And just last month, I read a book on the early Jesuits, and I sent him an email, said, do you know this? And he knew the author, heard him speak, and he critiqued and all this. And it's absolutely wonderful. So I'm thankful for reports, not just at Georgetown, but other places where you have established relationship with college administrators. Thanks be to God. I'm thankful for the reports of what has happened through history of InterVarsity in terms of involvement with IFES national movements. And when I click this button, you're going to see all the countries where we have either helped plant those national movements or been significant in leadership. Isn't this cool? I'm not going to talk. Just let you watch this. Let's give glory to God. Isn't that great? And finally, I'm thankful for each of you. You know, the piety that you display, your passion for students and faculty, the many sacrifices you make. And I want to parenthetically say, tonight I'm going to focus on the campus mission because that's the main thing we do. But I really want to thank those of you who work in our camps, our 4 wonderful camps. I want to thank those of you who work with the NSC, with me. All right. And I want to thank those of you who work at IDP. We honored you last night. You're great. But what I thought I wanted to do is I wanted to find a person that I could identify as sort of being the repository of many of the things I love about all of you and respect in you. And his name is Christian Animal. Chris is a staff member, a grad faculty at Cornell, and this year at age 48, he passed away of glandular cancer. And what was remarkable was to read the tributes about Chris from the Muslim chaplain and the Jewish chaplain at Cornell, his pastor's heart, his sense of worship, his life of the mind. And it got so bad at the end of his life that when he went to hospice care, he didn't have use of his arms or his legs. And at his memorial service, one of our staff spoke, and a nurse came up and talked to her. And our staff asked, well, hospice care nurses, do you always come to funerals? And the response was, I've never come to funerals. And then she paused, and her eyes welled up, and she said, but this man changed my life. So here was a man who was dying, who should have been and could have been depressed and angry, and he was sharing the gospel with his nurse. And, you know, like Paul, I am thankful for such reports. They inspire me, they motivate me, and they bless me. Thank you. Let's move on to the second verse, and that is, I am obligated to Greeks and to non-Greeks. At the same time I was preparing this talk, I read a book about a man named Adoniram Judson, and I think I have a new sense of what being obligated means. Adoniram Judson was born right after the American Revolution. At age 20, he had a remarkable conversion. I mean, it was really remarkable. And by the time he was 22, he had a call of God to be a missionary overseas. The problem was no North American had ever done that before, and also there were no missionary-sending societies. So for 2 years, he shamed his elders, the pastors of the denomination, into forming a missionary-sending society. And at the same time, he gathered together his friends. And there were 7 of them, and they determined and committed together to go to Burma, which is today known as Myanmar. And he got them together, and off they went. But it was not an easy thing. They were aging from age 24 to 17, so they were really like college students. By the time they got to Burma, the 17-year-old had died. They spoke no Burmese. The Burmese spoke no English. It took 6 years to see their first new believer. A few years later, he was accused of being a spy. There was a war between England and Burma. And of course, as an American, he had nothing to do with it. But for a year, he was in what was called the death prison and was hung upside down by chains at night. He barely survived that. But a while after that, his wife, who he loved dearly, passed away. And for 4 months, he went every day to her grave and just sat there. He bought himself his own coffin. He was so despondent and depressed. Life was difficult. And over his 40, but he stayed for 40 years. And over those 40 years, there were 25 new believers, but maybe 10 of those really had any spiritual fruit. So you look at that and you go, wow. And in those 40 years, he buried 2 wives, 6 children, and 11 co-workers. As I'm reading this book, I'm just thinking, I am obligated. What am I obligated compared to that? I mean, that is so strong. Now, there were a couple of good things that happened for him. I might say, one of the 10 was from a tribe, and he went off and became an apostle to that tribe and made a huge difference. And also, Judson translated the entire Bible from Hebrew and Greek into Burmese. He died in relative obscurity, and about a decade ago, a friend of mine went to Asia to celebrate the 150th anniversary to celebrate his life, Judson's life. And he picked up a Bible, and as he looked at it, it was all Burmese, he couldn't understand it, but there was one line in English, and it said, translated by A. Judson. It's still the Bible that's being used today. And as he turned to a Burmese pastor, he said, I want you to tell me what Adoniram Judson means to you. And this is what the fellow said. Whenever someone mentions Judson's name, tears come to my eyes because we know what he and his family sacrificed and suffered. Today there are 6 million Christians in Myanmar. And every one of us traces our spiritual heritage to one man, the Reverend Adoniram Judson. It is an amazing story, is it not? And when we think about our obligation, what does that mean? Are we as obsessed about our mission as Adoniram Judson was about his? Are we as willing to make the sacrifices that he made for the sake of the gospel? Are we willing to invest today, even if it doesn't seem to bear much fruit, so that 6 million may be impacted over the next century? Can we even envision what the Lord might have for us in our ministry? You know, I think it's clear that Paul knew what his obligation was. He was an apostle to the Gentiles. For Adoniram Judson, it was clear what his obligation was. It was to reach the Burmese. And our obligation is equally clear. We are obligated to pray and to act so that 17 million students and faculty may be transformed by the gospel. We are obligated to pray and act so that 2,000 colleges and universities in this nation will be renewed. We are obligated to pray and to act so that thousands of our students and our faculty are sent out to change the world. That is our obligation. And as I thought about how to break that down into some component parts, I came up with four things that I wanted to mention under this rubric of our obligation. The first is pretty obvious, that we are obligated to take the gospel to campus. There's a moment that I'll never forget. It's February 2006. Collegiate Ministries is meeting in the Bay Area. The leadership is the vice president, the national field directors, the regional directors. We are looking at the evangelism initiative. And it sets a lofty goal that we will see 1 out of 12 of our undergraduate students come to faith every year. The goals for graduate students and faculty had not yet been set, so we were looking at the undergraduates. And it said that we would pray, that as leaders we would model, that we would raise up regional champions, evangelism champions, that we would do missional events, like you've seen out UCLA and Michigan State on the videos, that we would have a curriculum, we would just do a number of things. And I remember one of the RDs stood up and he said, "How dare we do no less?" And what he was saying in essence is, it's non-optional. We are obligated. And at that sacred moment, there was a covenant formed. And I don't think it's coincidental, friends. I just know that the last 2 years, we have seen what we have seen. It's the grace of God. And we submitted ourselves as a leadership group. And we said, "God, please use us. Please take us. And please impact our campuses." The second component of this obligation to the 17 million is to reach more students and faculty and campuses. We currently reach 33,000 core students and faculty. And when I say core, I mean they self-identify as being more than 50% in participation. So I asked the fellow who puts together our annual field reports, and I said, "Well, how many do we impact?" And he came back, and his estimate was easily 100,000. So did you know that we have staff on twice as many campuses as any other national campus ministry in the United States? We are far too modest. Actually, I like our modesty, but I can say it as president. We are a modest organization, and yet God has used us in many great ways. Now, having said that, even if I take the higher number of students and faculty that we're working with, we are still reaching only 0.5% of our target of the people, our people mission group. It's 0.5%. And at best, we're on 1/3 of the campuses. So our prayer is in the next 5 years, we will see up to 42,000 core students. That's a 27% increase. And we won't plant 100 chapters. We're doing 24 now. We want to do 76 more. Just a word about numbers. And I know that some of you kind of chafe when you hear numbers. But Mike, let me give you this story. It talks to me. In the chapter plans last year, there were about 400 core students who were new to InterVarsity, and 26 of those became Christians last year. Every one of those is somebody's son and daughter and grandchild and sister and brother. And while it's not about the numbers, it's about each of those people. And how can we do less? We are obligated, friends. The third part of our obligation is to build a vibrant multi-ethnic fellowship. And you know, as you read through Romans, as we're going to do together, every chapter has a multi-ethnic component to it. I've read that the original church in Rome was probably Jewish, and then Claudius, the emperor, kicked them out, and then the Gentiles promoted in the church, and when the Jews started trickling back, you can imagine some of the tensions and some of the interesting dynamics that occurred there. But the point I want to make here is that as we talk about multi-ethnicity, it's not because it's trendy, it's not because it's politically correct, it's because it's biblical. And God has called us not only to be reconciled to Him, but to be reconciled to each other. Is it easy? You know, if it had been easy in Paul's day, I don't think he would have written so much about it. And as we have learned from our experience, it's darn hard. It was 3 years ago at the last National Staff Conference when we entered into a major pain on our multi-ethnic journey. And I know there was particular pain for Black staff and for Asian American staff, but there was a lot of pain for the rest of us as well. And I contributed to that pain, and I remain deeply sorry for that. The impulse, the temptation that we have at such times is to pull away and go to the safety of our ethnic-specific enclave. It's to seek comfort in those like us. But you know, I'm actually, as I look back over the last 3 years, I'm thankful because that's not what happened. You leaned into each other. You hung together. The leading service teams of the various ethnic groups began to meet together. We had hard conversations at national meetings. But you know, you hung in there. I really, if you haven't read Paula Fuller's article in Inside InterVarsity Online that summarizes her view of the last 3 years, please do so. It's a really important piece. You know, the other thing is we're still moving and learning as we go, but one of the things I like over the last 3 years is we've really tried to emphasize leadership development. So if you look in the last 3 years, four people of color have become regional directors. These are excellent leaders, but we're becoming more diverse. I want to show you a picture. This is of the LaFay and the Black Staff Fellowship Daniel Project cohort, and this is in our home. Notice that they gave the cabinet the chairs. That was very generous. I appreciate that. But God has been redemptive of broken things, and I just am very thankful. But we are obligated and joyfully obligated to continue on this journey. Amen? Thank you. For that one person in back. The fourth and final component of our obligation to reach 17 million students and faculty is to resource our vision. And I know that as you raise funds, you do this every day. But we at the national level want to be more serious players in helping you out. And so I'm thankful for the alumni program, for all the things that IF has done with the portal, for the great training that Advancement supplies. But I also want you to know that we are embarking on something InterVarsity has never done, and that's a vision campaign. And our goal for the next 3 years is to raise $10 million in current funding that will go to chapter planning, chapter building, evangelism, leadership development, multi-ethnicity, etc. And then secondly, to raise $10 million in planned giving, that is people who make the commitment now, put InterVarsity in their will, and those gifts, of course, won't be received for some time out. I'm pleased to let you know that we started on September 1, and as of today, we have about 4 million of the 10 million already committed. So that's very good. And I put this on the screen because when I am obligated, this really is about my obligation.